Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to this week's episode of Firefly Willows LIVE. Our host this week is Heisi Lutmers with Revolution. As we enter the dark time of the year, the veil between this world and the spirit world thins, allowing us greater awareness and access to those who inhabit it. Join us as Heisi explores these otherworldly realms. Heisi's guest will be psychic medium Robin Leisney, who will offer insight into the spirit realm, communicating with the dead, what the afterlife is like, and more. Robin will also guide us in a meditation that you can do during the show, or anytime by listening to the archive, that allows us to meet and communicate with your spirit guides. You'll also have a chance to call in and see who might want to communicate with you from the other side, as Robin joins Heisi in offering readings to listeners live on the air. So call 646-716-5510 or Skype in during the show for your chance to receive a reading and message from the other side. We're excited. Give us a listen. Firefly Willows LIVE Roundtable is an opportunity for all of our hosts to come together and share their thoughts, experience, and insights on a variety of topics that are of particular interest to each of them. Today's moderator is Heisi Lutmers, and our roundtable topic is, What is Reality?
Good morning. We're here once again for another episode of Firefly Willows Live, and this is Heisi, and today's episode of Revolution with Heisi. And I'm joined in the studio for our roundtable discussion by Mildred Lynn McDonald.
Good morning.
And Deb Caracella.
Good morning.
And John Caracella.
Good morning.
And today's topic was actually kind of spurred on by a special issue of New Scientist magazine that was all about reality. And so the question for today is, what is reality? And I'll start by reading a couple of quotes. They're very short quotes. One is by Philip K. Dick, the author, and he said, reality is that which, if you stop believing in it, does not go away. Another quote by Max Planck, who was the founder of quantum theory, said, I regard consciousness as fundamental. I regard matter as derivative from consciousness. And one more quote that we often hear, although there is a slightly longer version attributed to him, is by Descartes. And normally we hear, I think, therefore I am. But there is a longer version that says, I doubt, therefore I think, therefore I am. So those quotes are just a jumping off point, and it's really to think about, what is reality? Is reality something that is based on what we take in through our physical senses? And is that how we judge whether something is real or not? But then what do we do about things that can't be measured through the physical senses that we still feel are just as real? Such as, one example in an article was the number five. The number five is a very real concept to us, but there's no way to take that into the physical senses. So does that mean that it's not real? Or is reality, we often hear in Hinduism and Buddhism, that actually everything that we take for reality is all an illusion? Is reality dependent on who and what is observing it, and therefore we all actually see and exist in different realities based on what we're observing? Or is there a more objective form of reality that exists? So these are kind of the concepts and the questions that I would put out there to see what it is that you might think or ponder or be confused by when it comes to this kind of a question.
I see it's pointing at Mildred at the moment. Well, the first thing that comes to my being is, how relevant is reality in our lives? So whether it's real or not, I would challenge that question and say, I would put my importance on the relevance of reality, whether it exists or not, and how do you deal with that? And the reason I'm saying that is because when Heisi had suggested this topic area and I started to go through people's perceptions of reality, I found in my head that it started to seize up. My brain started to seize up. And it was like a ball hitting a wall. I could only go so far with this thought pattern, and then I got bounced out of the energy. So my sense is, reality as I understand it is relevant to a certain degree to me, and beyond that, I bounce out. It felt like a ball hitting a wall.
And your query was the ball?
Yes, my query was Mildred throwing whatever she had within her toward the question of my understanding of reality after reading different people's understanding and perceptions about reality and taking it as far as I could take it. I didn't have an aptitude or an ability to go beyond that point.
Mm.
So the ball hit the wall and then it came back to me. So I knew, and this happens in other areas with other concepts, I knew that I had personally taken it as far as I could go, or I would stretch that a little further. Maybe I've taken it as far as it was in my highest interest to go at this period in time.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. My experience of exploring this question is so completely different from yours, which is why I was interested in your experience. This question for me is one of my favorite questions. It's one of my favorite places to go. In fact, I'm led to this place very often as I ponder other challenges and other questions. So what is reality can be approached from so many different places. The only meaningful discussion I can have about reality is a discussion about the reality that I perceive, because everything else is subject to my own perceptive filter. So in a way, I can't answer the question, what is reality, outside of my own perceptual bubble. So that makes for one kind of inquiry. And sometimes I think that that's not a very satisfying way to go, because it's kind of at some point stops being relevant. It stops being a practical query. The other kind of reality query that I like is the one that relates to quantum physics, because that seems to be one that's mechanical in a sense. It takes us down this path where we're looking at the leverage we can get on reality. And when you study through this angle of attack, we get to the place where the quantum physicists tell us reality dissolves into a hologram. The latest interpretation and understanding of reality in deep physics is that it isn't particles. It's actually the interference patterns generated by fields, and there's no object, there's no physical thing you can touch at the very bottom of all of this, which leads us beautifully into the mystical, which is that it's all one big collection of fields, which really means it's all one field, which means brings us to the concept of oneness, and reality is this field that is everything. But any attempt to tease out a particular piece of it is an illusion. So as we tease out sweaters and blankets and shoes and earrings and dogs and concepts of love and justice, and those are all things that we conceptually distill out of that which is all this oneness for our own convenience. It's something that we do just because it entertains our consciousness.
Also, in quantum physics, you have the whole idea of multiverses. So there's a theory that everything is happening all at once in multiple universes. But what becomes our reality is which one of those we choose to observe in that moment.
You know, this comes back to a problem in quantum physics about there's something called the probability wave function that says that, you know, a particle isn't really here or there. It's only probabilistically in this general area. And something happens when we choose to observe it that collapses that probability wave function into something that appears in this reality as, oh, it's definitely there. But that only happens in the act of observation. One of the greatest minds of the 20th century, a guy by the name of John von Neumann, took on this problem of where does the probability wave collapse if it's not in the machinery, this magical machinery that we use to observe something. And he concluded that the only location where it is possible for the wave function to collapse is in the conscious mind. The only thing that was left after the analysis was that that reality distills itself into beingness in the conscious mind. That basically says that reality is arbitrary in as much as it is that which we choose to experience.
I just happen to agree wholeheartedly with Philip K. Dick and believe that
whether we're here or not here, reality exists. But I also agree that once we are laid on top of that reality, once we are part of the reality that exists, we create a totally subjective, personal understanding of what is going on around us. And it's different for everyone. And that doesn't mean that it's what each individual observes and feels and experiences is in any way wrong, but it is unique and separate from those around them. And so it's impossible for four people sitting in a room to have the exact same experience of the reality in which they are in. But whether we're here or not, reality is still happening around us or without us.
Well, I think that people get attached to what they think is reality, and they lose sight of the fact that perhaps what is real for them is not real for someone else. So, you know, if you think of a war, both sides think they are right and think they are fighting for something that they believe in, which is reality. Or are they both reality? It makes me think of, like, you know, the movie Rashomon, or even if you just go into a court case, five people observe an incident. They all see a reality that may be very different from what the other people are saying they saw. But who is to say which is the more real? Or are they all real? Or are none of them real?
And this is where the question of whether this exploration of this question is relevant or practical, I think, comes to bear very fruitfully. This, you can look at this as a really esoteric question that has little or no bearing on practical matters, or you can distill up from this place where the physics is suggesting being in relation to an event that distills it into a reality that is perceivable. If you accept that as a physical aspect of our reality, a fundamental principle of our reality, for example, then you collect and ride that concept all the way up to our daily interactions with one another. We get to this place where your reality is real and my reality is real, and yet we're experiencing the same moment and we experience something different. That it is literally real in different ways to each of us.
I was reading up on reality last night, and I ended up on Wikipedia, and it was talking about reality in the context of truth, as opposed to fantasy being in the context of untruth or falsehood.
So that which is true is real.
In this particular train of thinking.
Mm-hmm. So what or who determines what is true and what is not?
Because truth is very subjective.
Unless the measurement tool you're using for truth would be something outside yourself, such as your inner voice or your higher self.
The tool you use to measure truth in our external reality is this observation device that in the observing moment causes the probability function to collapse and elicits out a moment of tangible reality. But in the absence of that measuring device, it doesn't happen. So without the measurement, without the observation, there is no truth. So if it's in our consciousness where truth is actually measured, then it is in our consciousness that reality is actually created.
Well, what if truth isn't measured? What if truth is just truth?
How do we sense it?
Through a knowing.
And in that knowing, in that moment of knowing, it is where reality emerges into concreteness.
Which I still think is subjective.
Inevitably subjective, because the instruments in which we are contemplating that revealed truth, our bodies, mm-hmm. right, are unique,
mm-hmm.
right? So the truth, the field, the morphic field, the cosmic hologram may well be what it is and not subject to our interpretation, so to speak.
What if you're able to remove yourself from your body and step back and being an observer, so that your filter is pristine or clean? You're not bringing any of your personality traits or your belief systems, or some people call it ego, into the equation, and you pull back into the spot where there's no space and time, and that's where you're connecting with
the knowing.
So the question would then be, how far back do you go to remove your personality? Because if you go back far enough, you become one with God, and then you perceive everything.
Mm-hmm. Well, then you are the reality.
And then you are the reality.
Mm-hmm. From my experience, moving back, tapping into knowingness, you go and you catch the vibration, and then you bring it back into the real world. And sometimes it's difficult for the persona of yourself to be able to manage the information that you've accessed, and you have
to
figure out.
Or sync up with that vibration.
Yes, exactly. Yeah,
right.
Which I always laugh when people say, healers. Some healers have special gifts. Some healers can see angels, or some healers can feel different things, and that must be so wonderful. Looking at the upside of it, the biggest challenge, as far as I can see in reality, is healers and derivatives of healers managing when they access truth and bringing that through in their lives in integrity.
Yeah, it's hard.
Yeah.
It's a very
discipline.
Challenging. Yeah.
Well, some people might wonder why contemplate this kind of thing. And, you know, there are people that are going to enjoy the more philosophical, esoteric way of thinking about it. But I also think that on a practical, everyday level, you know, it's funny because a term you used, Mildred, was bringing it back into the real world. And I actually consciously will never use that phrase, because I would say like bringing it back to this plane of existence or something like that, because I am never going to use the phrase, because I don't think that there is a real world versus this is just one of many. In thinking about it on a practical everyday level, how often have we taken something as real and then later come to a realization that, now that I look at it with hindsight, I can see that perhaps what I had assumed or believed to be real really wasn't. So we can look back and say, 3 years ago, I was angry at someone for something that I assumed to be real. But now 3 years later, I can look back at that and say, you know what? That was really just my perception. That wasn't the real case, or that wasn't the reality of the situation. And so I think if we can stay very conscious about just the fact that there is a question around what is real, and that reality is based on how we observe something, and our own subjective perception of things is what creates our reality, which may not be the reality for someone else, nor the reality for a situation, then we can perhaps step back a little bit, like you said, Mildred, on a regular basis, be able to step back a little bit to look at a situation, perceive something, and not assume that what I am taking as my reality is the reality for everyone, versus that simply is how I seem to be seeing it or experiencing it. But I have to perhaps accept that someone else has just as valid of a reality as what I do, even though it may be completely different or very opposite from what I perceive to be reality.
Mm-hmm. That's one of the things that I think is so important about when you find yourself in conflicts with someone, to take the time to seek to understand, really fully understand the point of view from which they're experiencing the reality.
Or if you step back and you say, this is what I found. I found if you're able to do deep listening, I found that I might not have the capacity or the belief system or whatever I need to
belief system
to truly understand and appreciate what the other person is saying to me if it's really far off from my belief system.
Right.
But what I found that you can, for our listeners, what you can always bring to the table is an openness to listen. And I found that if the person you're interacting with senses that you are showing up in a truly compassionate, heart-centered, listening way, then that opens things up.
Mm-hmm. One tip I was just noticing even as we were talking, it's interesting how many words we have and phrases we have that use the word real. Mm. Because you have realization or realized or the real world. I'm going to just toss out a little challenge for people to try. Because one phrase that you often use or hear other people use is if somebody says something to you and perhaps you don't necessarily believe it or you question whether they believe it, we will say, oh, really? And what I'm going to challenge people to do is instead of saying, oh, really, to say, oh, reality, so that it triggers that thought process for you of, is this their reality? And is that my reality? But at least it starts the questioning process rather than I'm just going to dig in my heels of what I already believe to be reality. And if it doesn't match what the other person is saying or seeing, then I'm going to immediately assume that somehow there's something flawed or wrong or bad about the other person rather than simply allowing for the questioning process. So if you hear yourself getting ready to say, oh, really? Then maybe stop and say, oh, reality. To just start questioning those perceptions of whose reality and where is that reality coming from.
That's excellent.
Well, thank you, everyone, for being willing to just explore this topic. I would certainly encourage anyone listening, if they wanted to read a little more of where this kind of started, at least for me in terms of a topic, to check out the issue of New Scientist magazine, and they also have it online. It was a whole issue devoted to this idea of reality and various perceptions and perspectives and articles and things, as well as videos even. And I would encourage people to just take a moment to think about and realize that what we think is reality isn't necessarily the reality for others. So let's not get so stuck in what our reality is to the point that we become in conflict with others because their reality doesn't match ours. So thank you, everyone, for joining us here today.
Thank you, Heisi.
Thank you. Great topic, Heisi.
Enjoy the rest of the episode and join us for our next roundtable next week, which will be with John Carosella on his Convergence show. And until then, keep listening. And we will be right back.
Well, that's our roundtable for this week. Many thanks to this week's moderator, Heisi Luckmers, and participants Mildred Lynn McDonald and Deb and John Carosella. We hope you found this roundtable discussion engaging and thought-provoking. If you would like to join the conversation, visit facebook.com/fireflywillows and add your comment under this week's roundtable post. Stay tuned.
Everyone enjoyed that roundtable discussion around the question of what is reality.
Reality is probably something we take for granted quite often, and I think it's always good for us, especially for the things that we take for granted, to question them, to challenge ourselves, to ponder them, and to not necessarily assume that what we take for granted is always true or real. I want to remind people that a little bit later in the show, my guest, Robin Lisney, and will be joining us, and I will be talking to her, and then towards the latter part of the show, she is going to offer readings for anyone that would like to call in. Robin is a psychic medium, so if you were curious or hoping to perhaps connect with or communicate with your spirit guides or with someone who has crossed over to the other side and are wondering or wanting to see if there is any message from them for you, then I would encourage you to call into the show, get into the queue, so that you would have a chance to perhaps hear that message today. If you're on the show page, you can click on the Skype button and use Skype to call into the show, or you can call in by phone at 646-716-5510. And again, that number is 646-716-5510. And when you do, it'll ask you if you want to talk to the host or talk to the show, and you just press 1, and that will get you into the queue in order to receive a reading from Robin a little bit later in the show. I wanted to start, since this is going into the darker time of the year, which just means as of fall equinox, we really start to sense that the days are getting shorter and the night is getting longer. And this is a period of the year when we tend to go a little bit more internal or introspective. This is the, you know, as we go into the winter, it's a period of hibernation. And I was, a few episodes ago, actually, you might have heard me talk about a message that I received from a tree. I was on vacation for the weekend and came upon a tree and sat with it, and it had a message for me that I felt was also needed to be passed on. And I happened a couple of weeks ago to be out of town visiting at the same place. So I went by to visit my old friend, the tree there, and sat with it for a little bit. And once again, it had a message for me. And I found it very interesting because the message actually was very simple and may even seem kind of cliche, but I thought it's really perfect as we go into this time of year. And the message that it gave me was, stop trying so hard to figure out what the next big steps are and just start from where you are rather than feeling you're not where you want or need to be, which then causes us to get paralyzed from even taking a further step. And, you know, that's really important going into this time of year, because it also, this time of year, makes me think of the Hermit card, working with the Tarot. And that is a card that asks us to step back a little bit from the world, to be a bit more introspective, and to be willing to look at and delve into some of those areas that sometimes we keep shrouded in darkness because we don't want to look at them, we're afraid of them, there are issues there that we perhaps are unwilling to delve into or to have come up. But that just means that those issues sit there and are there rather than get healed or resolved. And so I think the message from the tree really speaks to that, as does the Hermit card, which often speaks to just take one step at a time and only step as far as you can see. And instead of worrying about where we're going or what the next big step is, focus on the little step that's in front of you, which will at least help you to make progress. And that will then illuminate the next step and the next step, rather than waiting until 17 steps down the road is illuminated before we start going. And sometimes we have to actually step back, which means in this time of year especially, step back in order to go internal, to be a bit introspective, and perhaps be able to see what that step is in front of us, rather than to keep stepping, and we're not necessarily taking the right step or in the right direction because we haven't stopped long enough to take a step back and see if that step is actually the one being illuminated for us to be following. So I would just offer and ask during this time of year, as the nights get longer, that you take some time to step back, step in, and be be willing to kind of investigate and explore and examine some of those shadowy or darker areas that we might have within us, where we often don't want to go, in order to shed a little light on them, which may help to then shed a little light on what our next step needs to be, rather than us taking so many steps trying to avoid those areas. So I just wanted to offer that up here at the beginning of the show. And when we come back in just a minute or two, we'll be talking with Robin Lisney. And Robin's been working as a psychic medium for over 20 years and also does a lot of work with energy medicine. And we're going to be exploring things like the afterlife and spirit communication and some different things like that, especially because this time of year, we see in many cultures a celebration of this time of year, and it relates oftentimes to honoring our ancestors and the dead. If you think that like November 1st is the Day of the Dead in some of the Mexico, some of the South American cultures, we also have what's called Samhain from the Celtic tradition, but also which is our Halloween. And this is a time when we often feel the thinness of the veil between us and the other planes of existence, and when we can often access the spirit realms a little bit easier, or we at least become a little bit more aware of the spirit realms and how they may be trying to communicate with us. So we'll be talking with Robin about that a little bit, as well as some other things, and then she will be offering us a meditation that we can do in order to communicate or contact or come into contact with our spirit guides or those on the other side. And then a little bit later in the show, Robin will also be offering readings for anyone that wants to call in and see if they have messages from the spirit realm. And again, if you want to call in for that, you can either Skype in from the show page or you can call 646-716-5510. So we'll be right back in just a minute with our conversation with psychic medium and energy medicine worker, Robin Lisney. We're back, and my guest today is Robin White Turtle Lisney, and Robin holds a Master of Arts, a Master of Fine Arts, as well as a PhD, and she is the author of three books, Dancing Up the Moon, Living a Sacred Life, and Heart Path, Learning to Love Yourself and Listen to Your Guides. Since birth, Robin has been able to see energy fields and spirits that live among us. In her professional life, she is a psychic medium and energy medicine practitioner, and she offers sessions through East West Bookstore in Mountain View, California, in her office in Santa Cruz, California, and also by phone across the country and around the world. She has been offering healing sessions for over 20 years, And you can find videos of her teaching and speaking on YouTube under her name, Robin White Turtle Lisney, which is Lysne. You can also find her or contact her through East West Bookstore in Mountain View, California, if you're in the San Francisco Bay Area. And you can also find more information about her as well as contact information for readings by phone by visiting her website, which is www.thecenterforthesoul.com, which will have contact information, information about the services she offers, and you can also call her at 831-457-2483. Besides her books, she has had many poems published in North American Review, Porcupine, Harvest from the Emerald Orchard, Samizdat, and numerous anthologies, including online literary magazines. In April of 2010, one of Robin's poems, called First Steps, was chosen for a memorial bench dedication at Virginia Tech, which was to honor the fallen students and faculty and staff who died there 3 years prior when there was a shooting at Virginia Tech. She is also a visual artist, having shown her work widely in the Midwest and East Coast, and she has two books of poems that are pending publication and several more books that are in the works, which we will ask her about during our conversation. She is a recent graduate of Mills College with a Master's of Fine Arts in Creative Writing, and in January, she will be receiving her PhD in Energy Medicine from the University of Natural Medicine in Santa Fe, New Mexico. So it is my honor to have on the show today, and please help me welcome to the show Robin White Turtle Lisney. Welcome to the show, Robin. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Heisey. It's so nice to be here.
The first thing I wanted to actually ask you, could you just give us a little insight as to the meaning or the origin of the white turtle part of your name?
Yeah, white turtle came to me in a Native American ceremony that I was involved in northern Wisconsin. And through the commitment I had in the ceremony, which was 4 years and 4 days, basically, of dancing, fasting, praying, there is an opportunity during the ceremony to receive your spiritual name. And I asked the person who's called the namer if he would do that for me or help me with that. And what you do is offer tobacco to a fire during the ceremony. And there's a lot that goes with it, but basically you receive the name through the fire. So it is a way to honor what your spirit name is, which is different than your given name. And so I use it in my work because it helps people to recognize that I have some Native American connections, at least spiritually, and that also I understand the four directions and the four elements and the things that the Native people teach us about that really belong to all of us. They also belong, you know, to other people in earth-based traditions, and they belong to actually each and every one of us. We've just kind of forgotten some of the wisdom that they've offered in the past.
And I think that people listening, you know, sometimes people think, oh, well, I would like to have a spirit name, but, you know, I haven't studied that, or I don't know how to go about having a ritual to get the name. But I think that people can also just receive the name if they just say are doing meditation or in communion with, say, their spirit guides. A name can often be given to us.
Absolutely. And there are many people that have gone to spiritual teachers, gurus, or you know, Hindu teachers and other teachers, or they have been given a name through their spirit guides. And this often happens. So, and then people take that as their name. I use both my American name or my Norwegian name, or Lisney and Robin, because those are my given names. And Lisney is actually a name that my mother was in my mother's family. And so naming is really important, because Lisney and Robin, I have a name from my mother and a name from my father, and then a name from the spirits. And so that's all. That's why I use all three of them.
Well, and I think people either don't think about or underestimate the energy and the power that's just in a name. And I've even talked to people when they're choosing a business name or even a name that they're going to use for an email.
Yeah.
Because, you know, even if we choose a name, a magical name, a spirit name, which we can also sometimes consciously choose, even if it's just for a certain period of time, we can do that, and because we resonate with the energy of that name and what it may have to offer or bring us, or what it's trying to evoke from us. And I think people, it's important for people to be more conscious and conscientious about the name and the names that they choose to use, especially to identify themselves, because of the energy that it draws to them as well as can bring up and bring about within them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's really important. I think our names, they carry a vibration. And in the earlier part of the show, in the roundtable, you were talking about realities. And actually, the vibration of a name connects you to the reality of your ancestors. And it also connects you to the reality and the vibration of each letter, which in numerology, of course, as you know, is connected to a certain vibration and a certain understanding esoterically. So I think that becomes very important.
And you mentioned that, I think that what you just said ties into this, because when we talk about connection to ancestors, it doesn't have to just be connection to bloodline ancestors.
No, it doesn't.
It can also be energetic or spiritual ancestors. Mm-hmm. And something that you had mentioned is you do a lot of work within the Native American traditions and realm, but I believe that you're not necessarily of Native American origin.
That's true. And, there's a lot of controversy about that, but I've been given the lodge that's part of my work in the world. I never charge for ceremonies, and that's my service work for people and for people that need help. And I would say that it's probably the most effective, and that's the Native American Sweat Lodge. That's the most effective, one of the most effective ways you can receive a healing. And so I've been running a lodge for 11 years. And I feel that it was definitely given to me twice. It came to me twice in two different circumstances. So like, you know, when you get the ladle on your head, you need to take it up. And so I finally received it, and I'm now learning another tradition, in the Lakota tradition. I'm learning a particular family altar that, I've been a part of for a long time, but I've never stepped up to take that responsibility, and now I am. And what's exciting about it is that you learn how similar and how different people are at the same time. We talk about different realities, and there are different spirits that go with those different realities. That's really fascinating to me. So I'm always kind of at the feet of the mystery, trying to understand and be with it.
So besides the service work that you offer, like with the sweat lodges and things, can you maybe tell us a little bit about some of the other work you do, such as energy medicine and as a psychic medium, and especially how you kind of came to an awareness of those aspects of yourself and were able to develop and work within those realms?
Yeah, I grew up in a reality of a large family. I have four sisters. Those sisters, all of us were fairly intuitive. My mother was highly intuitive and never discounted my psychic abilities, and knew that I saw spirits and she saw spirits and experienced them as well. So she always just asked me about what I was perceiving. She never doubted it. Very often in church we used to sit together and we would talk and look at the spirits in the church. And I was raised in a Lutheran church. And, of course, that wasn't really something they talked about in the Lutheran church. But my mother and I talked about it a lot, and we would sit in the balcony usually, and we could see the whole church really well, and you could see the spirits and the angels in the church. And we talked about it frequently, and that was my reality growing up. And so my understanding was everybody could see this stuff, and everyone could see the other side, and that was just part of life. There was no weird thing about it. It was just a natural thing. It was a natural part of my growing up. However, the other side of my family, my father's side, were Baptists and Lutherans, very strict Lutherans. And even though we were in the Lutheran church, my mother's side were more spiritualist kind of people, and involved in, not really involved in a church, but had deep spiritual beliefs. And so we just knew when to talk about things and when not to talk about things at family gatherings. And that's how we navigated. But the belief that everyone has this possibility is still with me. I know that everyone can. It's just that through our conditioning and through over time in our lives and our past lives, that ability might have been shut down at some point in our existence, or we may have misused the power and it was taken away from us. So this happens with people, and you know, it's a lesson, and it's not punishment. It's just, well, you're not ready for that, you know, level of understanding of humanity. But for me, what it does is it really helps me see the different realities in the world. The ones you were talking about previously at the roundtable, it was so fascinating. I love that discussion.
And do you really think that it's something that is taken away from us just because it's misused? I tend to think of it more like if you have your driver's license suspended, you know, you have the ability to get it back, but you have to kind of prove that you are both ready and willing to work with it in an honorable way, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. You know, because I think people get scared that either it will run out, like if I use it too much, I'm going to run out, or if it's taken away, then, oh, I'm never going to get it back. And then they develop perhaps self-confidence issues or other issues because they think that somehow they've done something wrong or bad, which to me feeds into, because when you talk about the conditioning, feeds into sometimes we just get it by osmosis because our society tends to be much more, Abrahamic faith oriented, let us say. And so somebody who thinks it was taken away from them might get caught up in guilt and think that they somehow sinned or did something wrong or bad that they're now being punished for, rather than simply learning the lesson from that. So
what I mean is that we actually take it away from ourselves. It's like there is a part of us that knows, and that is the God nature itself. And I feel that what we do is we restrict our own consciousness from receiving that kind of information if we're not ready for it, or if we feel that it's too much of a responsibility or whatever. You know, we impose that on ourselves. There is, in my understanding, a council of high beings, but they're not judges. They're not police. They're part of the greater awareness of the universe that's really so supportive and so loving. But just like a child with a toy that might hurt them, if the child doesn't know better and starts whacking his sister on the head, somebody has to take it away from them. So I think our own consciousness takes it away from us. Our own higher understanding that is all wise and all knowing actually literally takes it out of the child's hand of our lower consciousness. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah. And I think that this is really where you get into work with ego and shadow. Well, because like the beings that you were talking about, I, you know, have often heard referred to, as well as I tend to think of, as either the Star Council or the Ascended Masters. Right. And there's more a sense that they're always there and you can always go before them, but you need to be willing to come in a sense of humility which is kind of overcoming the ego. And if you go before them and then are willing to open up to the lessons, then they're not going to say, oh, sorry, you screwed up, you can't have this back. They're going to say, okay, now it seems you're ready, so let us show you how we can open that up again for you and how you can work with it.
Exactly.
And if people are coming to a certain awareness within themselves that these kind of abilities are wanting to manifest or be worked with, what are some tips you might offer them to nurture them, to work with them, and to not only not to be afraid of them, but to not go down a path that might cause them to misuse them?
Well, I think the first thing that I would recommend is that this work can never be used to manipulate other people or to harm other people. It's always done with a great sense of humility, with a sense that, you know, I am witnessing this. This is something I'm witnessing. It's always from the witness state that you are, and that's a very neutral place. It's a very neutral place within yourself to come into alignment with your light and be in the witness state to offer then, that helps actually open up our consciousness. So when we can meditate enough to actually experience our witness self, which isn't that, you know, far off. It's available to everybody if you are willing to discipline your mind. That witness state then opens up the possibility that we can perceive other energies, other worlds, the other side, spirit guides. And it comes with a great sense of awe. You can't, you know, there's an old biblical statement that, you know, you can't enter the kingdom of God except with a child's, you know, viewpoint. I mean, I'm not quoting it exactly, but it's about that awe, that wonder, that's entering the kingdom, literally. And what you're doing is you're in your own state of consciousness, being witness to the wonder and the beauty and the awesomeness of this world. And so as you meditate, meditation is the key for me. That's what's helped me to get to that understanding of my higher self and of my wisdom self or my witness self. And once I'm in that state, then I have access. The other piece of it is aligning ourselves with earth and sky. So this is where the earth-based traditions come in that help us understand that we are a universe within this greater universe. So if we connect with the earth and the sky, literally, I'm not saying even it's metaphoric, but it's also literal, that we are this point of light between the earth and the sky. And as we connect with the earth and the sky and actually bring the earthly energy and the sky energy through our bodies into our hearts, then we actually have heart eyes and we can see with our hearts. And that's seeing in a different realm, in a different world, and this is how people can access it. So we have to step out of our, you know, the he, she stuff, you know, he's right, I'm wrong, or she's wrong and I'm right. We have to step out. That's all the ego stuff. I'm better, they're worse, or they're worse and I'm better. You know, whatever those, that's the ego mind. And when we step out of that and witness and observe, then we are stepping more into our God nature.
And this is something I think that is really gone into greater depth and something that you help people to connect with and come back into in your book, Heart Path.
Yes, yeah. Heart Path was given to me through my spiritual guides, and it's a channeled book. And Heart Path teaches the meditation, the Heart Path meditation. And the Heart Path meditation actually literally brings us into our bodies, into an embodied spirituality, not where we have to leave our body to go to other astral worlds. No, it's all about being right here, right now, being very, very present, and coming into our what I know of as our three stars or our three centers in our bodies, which is in our third eye, in our heart, and in our pelvis. And then we connect with the earth through those three stars. and then come into our hearts. And we're going to be doing this meditation a little later in the show. So you know, those of you that are listening, you're welcome to join me with that meditation. The meditation's been able to be used to access a lot of different things. Once you're in your heart, you can access the other side. You can ask, you can access your past lives. You can access all kinds of information about relationships. And this is actually how I support people and help people in the readings and the healing work that I do. It's a place to center myself in order to witness what's going on for them.
And is some of this work also related to some of the things you offer? Like, I know for a few years you've been offering the Stargate workshops or gatherings.
Right.
And that kind of thing. Is that also related to this kind of work?
Yes. The Stargate meditation started in 2001, I believe. And what I was asked to do by Star Woman, who is part of the Star Council or the Ascended Master Council, you can it has a number of different names. Star Woman is a Native American, known by the Native American people. She is a Native American. She belongs to all of us. But in a ceremony I accessed, was able to, I don't know, somehow miraculously, she came into the ceremony, and she was very, very present there. And during the ceremony, she left, and after that came back to me and started, I started channeling her. Through there's just a lot of time that passed between the first thing and the last thing, but I also went to Brazil, studied how to become a medium, and ended up bringing her into my body to talk to other people. Now she's like the Great Mother. She's the darkness behind the stars. She's the substance of the universe. She's what actually is the creative force, life force. In the universe, and she's the female inspiration for all deities, female deities on the planet. So Star Woman is this great, fecund, beautiful mystery. She's the mystery itself in a certain way. And when she comes into my body, she has to come in very slowly and in little bits, because she's really huge. And she could blow me up, as she says. So she comes in really slowly. But what Stargate is a meditation process. It's an initiatory process. People that are involved in Stargate, and some have been in it since 2001, and have meditated every month, twice a month, together. We come together. We do a meditation. We create a vortex that brings light into the planet. And that's what I've been doing. We're coming to the end of this process. So the end of 2012, December 21st, will be the last Stargate that we'll do. And whether they give me some more assignments like this to do or not, I don't know. But this was quite an adventure. We've gotten very close, the people that have been involved in it. And after that time, I think the meditation may be opened up to others. I don't know. But it is right now a group of people that come together every month, and they have just been so dedicated to this. It's just been marvelous. And they've given them themselves every month, twice a month, to create a vortex together as a group and bring light into the planet. And this has helped actually the transition of the planet from the old consciousness to the new consciousness. So the light goes into the earth, it goes out to everybody in the world. And there are many other people doing this kind of work all over the world that I don't know about personally, but I know that they exist because the spirit guides have told me. You're working in this area, somebody else is working in other parts of the world, and this is what we're doing right now to help the earth. So it's all about helping the Mother Earth, because she's actually a living being, and she is evolving in her consciousness. So we're helping the Earth evolve. We're helping ourselves evolve, because the light comes through us, and it helps us with our own ego patterns, with our challenges. It's a little bit of a support group. I'll be starting another meditation group at the first of the year, so that's going to be available to people. And it's all through this Heart Path process. So the Heart Path process is a very big part of this, and it's one piece of the meditation that we do as a group. So that's what Stargate is.
And if people were interested in getting your book, Heart Path, or the other books that you have, are those available through the normal channels like Amazon and that kind of thing, or do they need to go to your website and contact you directly to get that?
They can get them through Amazon. I highly recommend that they also go to East West Bookstore and buy them at a regular bookstore, because Amazon, let me say that it supports the bricks and mortar and jobs of the people. If you go to a regular bookstore and buy them there. But you
right.
can also go to Amazon. Yes, it's on Amazon. And you can go to my website and give me a call, and I can send you a copy, too. So oh. I have them. They're also available through my website. So if you go to my website, thecenterforthesoul.com, you can find not only a link to Amazon, but you can also find a link to you can find information on how to contact me, so I can send you the book too.
Okay. I think what we'll do at this point, we're going to take a little break, and we're going to leave people a little teaser, because I know what everyone's dying to know, since you've worked in this realm for a long time, are things like, what is the other side and the afterlife like? And,
yeah.
you know, what are the dead like, and how do you communicate with them? So I think that we'll really delve into that after a quick little break here. And I also just want to remind people listening that if you're interested in getting a reading with Robin on the show today, feel free to either Skype in from the show page or call 646-716-5510. And if you are interested in doing some work with Robin on a personal basis or getting some energy medicine work or a reading or that kind of thing, then you can contact Robin through her website at www.thecenterforthesoul.com, or you can also call her at 831-457-2483. So we will take a little break right here, and we will be back to hear what the afterlife is like, what kind of dinner parties are being thrown on the other side by those who have crossed over, as well as many other fascinating little tidbits. So stay tuned, and if you're interested in a reading, feel free to Skype or call in, and we will be right back after this. back, and I'm talking to my guest, Robin White Turtle Lisney. And Robin has been working for over 20 years as a psychic medium and in energy medicine. And I know one of the things that people are always fascinated by, sometimes a bit afraid of, but never short of curiosity about, is especially the work as a psychic medium and communicating with those on the other side, communicating with spirits. So could you just tell us a little bit about your history and work doing that before we delve into asking you some of those questions about, you know, what was the last dinner party like and all of that?
Well, the mediumship really came to me through a series of deaths that I experienced, and the deaths were very profound, and they blew open my awareness. You know, we have barriers that are given to us when we come into this planet, a veil of forgetting, so to speak. And that's done so that we can just live our life in the moment and not have to be living with our past lives as well, and all the things that we've done in other times and so on and so forth. So, but what happened when these deaths occurred within a year and a half of each other, one my mother and one my daughter, was that it just blew open my consciousness to understand that we are part of this greater, amazing universe that's all around us. The spirit guides are right here. They're right here next to us all the time. All people have guides. I've never seen a person without guides, and I've worked in all kinds of circumstances, in jails and, with people that were drug addicted and all kinds of circumstances. And there is no one that I have ever witnessed that has not had at least one guide or one spirit. But the experiences that I had helped me to then turn around and say, okay, this part of your life is over. You're not going to be a mother. You're not going to have the family life that your sisters or that other people have. This is your life, is doing this spiritual work and to do this work for other people. And so I was married at the time. It took my husband and I went to Brazil, and we learned a tradition called Umbanda, and we were being trained as mediums. And so the two of us learned a certain level of mediumship in that tradition, and we came back. And then after about 2-year period being involved on a weekly basis, almost daily basis with Umbanda, we recognized both of us that we needed to leave that temple, not through any negative experience with them, but just that our guides were pushing us out of it. And so we acknowledged that, and then my guide said, okay, now start to center. So I was like, okay, I guess that's what I'm doing. So I started the Center for the Soul, which was an educational center in my home, and I had classes and workshops and things like that out of my house. And then what I did was I channeled classes. So they were instructed me to bring my guides in to talk to other people and to give people a sense of the other side so that they understood that there is no separation. I think that that's the most profound experience we can have, is to understand that we are always, always taken care of, always loved. And that is so amazing. So the other side to me is not any different than this side. It's just that you don't have to worry about eating, sleeping, and paying the bills. So that's the advantage. It's also, Edgar Casey said, great psychic and mystic, he said, in my father's house there are many mansions. And I believe he got that piece out of the Bible. So I don't know where it is in the Bible, but it's true. That's my experience. There are many, many realms that people can go to that are almost like going to different schools. They are literally schools, literally realms where people can go and learn more about relationship. they can go and learn more about perceiving violence or understanding peace or understanding how the cosmos works or understanding spiritual guides or understanding spirit and matter. I mean, there are thousands of different realms that once you cross over, you can go learn more about that. So that's it in a nutshell.
So when you talk about interacting with your spirit guides or spirit guides in general, is there a difference between spirit guides and, say, communicating with a loved one who has crossed over?
Well, yes and no. Spirit guides are what I've been taught by my guides is that there are two kinds of spiritual guides for us. There are angels who have most of the time not been in a body, although today there are more and more beings that have been angels coming into bodies, but most of the time angels do not come into a physical human body, and they work as a direct impulse or thought of the divine. Of there is like a Godhead, there is a place where the light is the most intense, or like where you can think of it like the physical sun. But in my experience is there is a purity to those angelic forces that help us understand the spiritual world and help us guide us in our lives. And then there are spirit guides, and spirit guides have been in a body, so they know what it's like to walk on the earth and to feed your family and to do all the practical things that we have to do in this world. And so spiritual guides have been in a body. That's the only difference between angels and spirit guides. And then there are the souls of our loved ones who have crossed over. Now, some of them could be angels. Some of them could be spirit guides. Some of them could be people that we wouldn't necessarily want to meet in a dark alley. You know, we all have relatives that we're not necessarily proud of. So it's no different in a certain way to meet a relative or a person on the other side than it is a spirit guide or an angel. It's just their consciousness is maybe different or varied, and that's the only difference. The process for connecting with them is the same, and you're calling, when you're calling in the spirit guides or the angels, you're usually asking for help or support. And that would be a difference. With our family members, usually the questions run like, how are they? Where are they? What are they doing over there? Can they tell me about this? Or can they tell me about what happened to, you know, that chest of coins that Uncle Tom had?
Right.
And those are some of the questions that I get. But what's interesting to me is that the spirit guides and our relatives, sometimes the people that we've had in our lives have been like angels to us. They have been loving to us and kind to us and supportive of us and unconditionally loving. And that is what I would say is the higher consciousness that distinguishes those that are part of our, the most loved people are the ones who love the most. And so that's true in the angel realm, too. They love us unconditionally. The spirit guides love us unconditionally, and that's really the only difference between our spirits that leave our bodies and those that are on the other side.
I think that it's important for people to realize if they came to you for a session and were wanting to, and I know a lot of times people do this, they'll come and they'll say, you know, I want to hear from my, you know, Uncle Bob, or I want to hear from somebody specific. And yeah, it's not always guaranteed that that person is who will come through for them. And I wonder if you just have a little bit of insight or advice for people about when they come to a session, what to expect, what not to expect. And I actually think sometimes, because I have a personal belief in reincarnation, that mm-hmm. sometimes when somebody comes asking to connect with someone in particular and that person doesn't come through, it may be because that person is no longer in the spirit realm, that they have reincarnated and are going through another part of their own growth and evolution. That's just my own personal theory. But I'm wondering if you just have a little bit of insight or advice for people as to what to expect or not expect when they come to a session like that, and if it's okay to ask to communicate with someone in particular.
Oh, that's a great question, because I think it's very important to recognize that, first of all, when someone passes over, there's a time period, a physical time period of, it could be several weeks, several days, or several months, depending on the person, and depending on how they died. If they died very suddenly, usually it takes them a little longer to actually fully cross over. Sometimes spirits get caught between worlds, and that transition is like, imagine, you know, going through a physical birth, just like a mother has to recover after a birth. It doesn't just take her a couple weeks, it takes like a long time. You know, it can take up to a year for her to feel fully like alive again, even with this beautiful infant that she might have. It takes time for the spirit to actually go through the tunnel, go back through that birth canal back into the spirit world. It's like they're coming home, they're getting born back into the spirit world. But it takes time for them to get over there and then kind of get their feet on the ground, so to speak, not literally, of course, but to kind of get their bearings, to find out what happened, to understand what happened, to review their lives. So I recommend not having any kind of reading with someone who's crossed, say, within the last month or the last even 2 months, depending on how they died. If they died very suddenly and they weren't expecting it, they had a car accident, heart attack, somehow they had aneurysm and they dropped very suddenly, sometimes it takes them longer. If they were murdered, that takes even longer because they weren't anticipating it. They didn't necessarily want this to happen. And then suddenly they're on the other side and they don't know what happened. So the orientation takes time. If someone has a long, slow death, it could be less time, maybe a month, you know, but I don't recommend that they come and get a reading until after at least a month to 2 months has passed. For some, it's longer. It could be up to a year. In the native traditions, many native traditions, Lakota and Anishinaabe traditions, they recommend that you don't even speak the name of the person for a year. And that is because they don't want to call the spirit back to them. They want the spirit to go on to where they're supposed to be. So the spirits, once they cross here, they lose. They don't need to have the connection with the physical realm. So a lot of times the questions about money or, you know, inheritance, they're almost irrelevant to the people that have died because they're not interested in that anymore. They're not concerned about it. They don't have to worry about it. It's not part of their problem. Unless they were very, very earthbound, then, you know, they might be interested. But what I have, more times than not, I get people that ask about inheritance, and the answer is, you know, it's really your problem now. It's not my problem. Do what you're going to do, but be fair about it and realize you're creating karma if you're cheating somebody. So, you know, it's kind of interesting, the reality on that side versus this side. The material is so important here, and the material is not at all important over there.
Right. And just as a reminder to anybody listening, Robin will be offering you the opportunity to see who on the other side might want to communicate with you a little later in the show. So if you're interested in that, feel free to call in or Skype in from the show page. You can click the Skype button or call 646-716-5510. And I'm wondering if you could maybe tell us a little bit about what you have upcoming in terms of books or workshops or things that you're going to be, or that you feel are now ready to have gestated and are now ready to start coming out into the world as we move forward in the next couple of months and into 2013.
Yeah. Well, I just, as you mentioned before, I just finished a dissertation and finally got it all approved. So I'll be graduating in January officially, but basically my PhD was, I wrote the Handbook to Heart Path, which is a process that helps practitioners teach Heart Path. So the Heart Path process, which is this meditation that I'll be doing a little later in the show, has the opportunity for therapists and for other people that work in energy healing to access the core issues that people are dealing with. That includes karmic issues, it includes past life issues, it includes energetic issues that are going on in a person's physical body. So the Heart Path, this Handbook to Heart Path is one book that I've just finished. And I'm in the process of reviewing that, and will be hopefully publishing it next year. Another book that I've been working on is a novel that is about my great-great-great-grandmother. And she was a midwife in the 1820s and one of the first official midwives in Norway. And so I'm working on that, and I have no idea when that'll get published. I've got a couple of poetry books that I'm working on that are actually, one's in process and one is done and is out in publishing hands right now, and I'm hoping to get that published. And then another book that I'm working on is a book on what it's like to be someone who has my gifts and abilities. And it's just beginning. It's a memoir. But I haven't really, it's just beginning. I'll just say that much. It's kind of getting born in this moment.
And, of course, to keep up with the different workshops and books that Robin has coming out and when they'll be available, you can always visit her website at www.thecenterforthesoul.com. Or if you are interested in contacting her for a private session or for some work regarding energy medicine and that kind of thing, you can also find out information about that and contact her through the website or by calling her at 831-457-2483. And yes.
Yeah, I see. There's also another book that I've been also have out to publishers called Rights for Our Times. And it's a revision of my first book, Dancing Up the Moon, giving us ritual ways to help ourselves and the earth and help our transitions during our lifetimes, during this lifetime, you know, all the different transitions that people go through. It gives people actual tools for making ritual and how they can help themselves without any particular religious orientation. It's kind of for those secular spiritual people.
Great. Mm-hmm. And as Robin mentioned, we're going to take a quick break, and then when we come back, she's going to offer us the Heart Path meditation that can be found in her book Heart Path. And you are welcome to do that meditation while listening, unless you're listening in your car, then I would advise you to perhaps not do it fully. But you can always come back to the archive of the show here on our Blog Talk page, or you can visit our website at fireflywillows.com/live, where all of the shows are archived, as well as you can find Firefly Willows Live as a podcast to download on iTunes. And you can always listen to any of those archived versions to use to do this meditation at any point in the future as well. So we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. If you want, get a little something to drink, some tea, some water, find yourself a nice quiet space to do the meditation in. And we will come back and have Robin lead us through that Heart Path meditation. So we will be back in just a couple of minutes to do that. And also, as a reminder, if you'd like a reading from Robin, feel free to Skype in from the show page, or you can call 646-716-5510. So we will be right back after this. First with the meditation, and then with the opportunity for a reading from Robin.
Firefly Willows LIVE is proud to support Cimarron Sanctuary, a nonprofit organization where magic happens for horses and kids. Founded in 2010 and located in Petaluma, California, Cimarron Sanctuary provides a venue for assisting horses in need and facilitating the magic of horse and human communication. Cimarron Sanctuary takes in horses who need a home and or a purpose, rescue horses, and adopts them until they can be placed in a permanent home or provides a lifelong home for them in the sanctuary. Their volunteers donate their time, energy, skills, and caring for the benefit of the horses and the kids of all ages who visit the sanctuary. What happens is magical and results in personal transformation for both the horses and the humans. A beautiful handshake across both sides of the fence. Find them at CimarronSanctuary.org. That's spelled CimarronSanctuary.org. Or email them at info@CimarronSanctuary.org. Donations to help the horses can be made online at CimarronSanctuary.org/donate. This tip of the week from Cimarron Sanctuary. Did you know that horses help humans emotionally and psychologically? It has been proven that being around horses benefits humans, and especially children. Contact with horses promotes increased confidence, longer attention spans, improved communication skills, stronger motivation, feelings of empowerment, and becoming more socially open and available. Autistic children may become calmer and sometimes begin to talk.
Listen to the words of the Great Mother.
Whenever you have need of anything,
once in a month,
and better it be when the moon is full.
Better it be when the moon is full.
Then shall you gather.
Then shall ye gather
some
in some secret place and adore
the spirit of
me, who am queen of all witchery.
Who am queen of all witchery.
There shall ye gather. Ye who are fain
to learn all,
yet have not yet won.
And we're back with Robin White Turtle Lisney, psychic medium and energy medicine practitioner. And Robin is going to be leading us through her heart path meditation, which, if I understand correctly, is something that you can use to contact and communicate with your spirit guides, as well as to come into that heart center of yourself. So, Robin, I will hand it over to you and let you lead us through that.
All right. So those of you that are listening, if you'll start by getting comfortable and having your feet flat on the floor, and Feeling the light that you are coming into the crown chakra in the very top of your head. Imagining perhaps a lotus or a star at the top of your head or inside your head and right in the center of your sense perception. And knowing that that light is connected down through your throat and into your heart to a second star, a second lotus. And that star is shining light all through your arms and your chest and down into your head. And then that star is connected to a third star in your pelvis. And that star is shining light all through your pelvis and down your legs and right through the base of your body, through your root chakra. And they spiral together, those streams of light, like a 3-ply umbilical cord, all the way to the center of the earth. And going to the very, very center of the earth, connecting with the heart of the earth mother, allowing that earth light to come up through your feet and your knees and your hips and into your heart. And taking several deep breaths now, feeling yourself to be inside your heart, imagining yourself standing in the center of your heart. Taking a couple deep breaths and clearing a space away for yourself inside your heart. A place that you can be, a place where you can come into your heart. And as you imagine yourself standing in the middle of your heart, it becomes a garden. And around the outside of the garden, whether it's a wild garden, a wild place, or a manicured place, it has a fence or a hedgerow or a tree line or some kind of boundary around the outside with a clear gate that opens and closes in the front. And this hedgerow or tree line or fence goes all the way around the outside, all the way around the back. And it creates a boundary between you and others so that you can have your own place inside your heart garden and they can come to you and greet you on the outside of the heart garden. The first step now that you're in your heart garden is to call in all the aspects of yourself first. So we're going to call in your inner child and just allow that child to come to you. Next, we're going to call in your animal nature. This is the wild part of yourself. It may be more than one animal. It may be a four-legged predator or a wild prey, or it may be a bird, a winged creature, or a creepy crawly. Just allow it to come in and be a part of your heart garden, all those different aspects. But next, invite in your inner feminine nature. This is the part of you that knows how to be with yourself. It may not show up as a feminine, it may just show up as an energy of presence. And next, invite in your inner masculine nature, or the part of you that knows how to do things, and it may not show up as a male presence, it may show up as an energy presence of doing, the action-oriented aspect of your being. And now invite in your higher self, your all-wise, all-knowing self. This is your inner family. And take a minute to be with your inner family and to get to know one another if you've never met the other aspects of yourself. Just allow for that to occur. And take a couple deep breaths. And introduce your inner masculine and feminine, or your being and your doing nature. and allow for yourself to experience that. And now, what I'd like you to do is call forth your spirit guides all the way around the outside of the heart garden. And imagine that they can come to the fence or the hedgerow or the tree line, not inside the garden, but outside on the outside of it. And you may perceive them as beings of light, or you may see them as angels or guides or divas. Just allow them to be there. And notice how many there might be. Notice the quality of light. Perhaps they're colored light. Could be blues or purples or yellows. Notice that they have an energy presence. They may be firm, they may be solid, they may be ethereal. Allow for yourself to experience these aspects. And when you're ready, just take a couple deep breaths. And coming back to your heart garden, knowing that through this garden gate you can experience the parts of you that are afraid, the parts of you that have anger or other energies, so that you can send love to them and heal them and integrate them and bring them into the heart garden. You can also experience those that you love that have passed over. You can call them to the outside of the heart garden. And if it's very emotional for you, which it usually is, you may want to do this with some support. So I just offer this heart garden meditation. If you take a deep breath, come back to your inner heart garden and your inner self. Come back to your three stars, knowing that you can return to this garden anytime you want to experience the sense of yourself. And when you're ready, you can open your eyes, come back into the room. Very good. So how was that for you, Harsi?
Oh, that was great. And actually, I was surprised, not in a good or bad way, just surprised at how a couple of those inner family members appeared or looked or how they came. So that was very interesting to me.
Yes. Well, what's so amazing to me is that every person has their different experience of this. And I even, when I'm working with people, I have a different experience than the person that I'm working with. You know, I always kind of go with their experience. But sometimes I'll have other experiences that are parallel in my own understanding, you know?
Right.
So that's always kind of fun to see the differences. It seems there's a little construction going on above my head, and I have no control over it, so I hope it doesn't interfere with the radio.
I was wondering, I thought, who is doing construction? I mean, I'm checking, is everybody muted? But... But, you know, it's a good lesson in sometimes there are things we can't control, and either you just kind of go with it or you get upset. But what's getting upset going to do about it anyway?
Yeah. I think it's kind of a funny metaphor.
Yeah.
There's discussion going on the other side.
Yeah, that's right.
Anyway.
Maybe a message. Time for us to do a little remodeling and construction on our own inner gardens. Build that new shed. Get that new greenhouse up in the heart garden. So I think now that we kind of have that space set, that we will move right into some readings, because we have a few people waiting for that.
Okay.
And the first person who has been very patient, who actually called in way back at, right even before the show started, her name is Anne, and she's calling from New Jersey. And she was, in particular, she was hoping to hear from someone named Charles. And as we talked about, that may be who comes through for her and may not. So, Anne, are you there with us on the show?
I am. I'm here.
Welcome.
Hi, Anne.
Hello.
Welcome to the show. And I'm just going to go ahead and hand you over to the capable hands of Robin and her spirit guides. I don't know if spirit guides have hands, but whatever it is that they have, I will hand you over to those. And we will see what Robin is getting for you.
Oh, thank you, Robin.
Hi, Anne. How are you?
I'm wonderful. I hope you are, too.
I am. And how long ago did Charles pass? Is it some time?
He passed away in July.
Uh-huh. And what was his relationship with you?
He was a friend's father.
Uh-huh. Okay. So let me just check in with Charles and see if I can get some information from him. Okay, he's here.
Great.
Yes, he's here, and he's a very his presence is very beautiful, I will say. He has a lot of gold light in his presence. He seems that he was a very caring person. I can tell you that much. He's wanting to ask what you're wanting to know. What is it that I can help you with in connecting with Charles?
Just anything that he wanted to tell me, you know, concerning, you know, what he wanted me to do.
What he wanted you to do, okay.
Yeah.
Are you the executor of the estate, or?
No, just a friend of the family.
Uh-huh. Well, I feel that he is asking, I see him putting arms around everyone. I feel that he's asking you to, I'm not getting any words, I'm not getting any particular like verbal messages, but what I do is I'm getting the symbol.
Okay.
That feels like a way to embrace, hold, be with those that have been left, to also to have them understand that they know that he knows that there's some struggle going on, that he understands that, and that if they ask for help, they will receive help. He cannot help them at this time. There isn't anything he can do because of his particular place in the. I don't want to call it a hierarchy, but it's like his job isn't to be the one directly to help, but there is help available, and he's asking, like he's saying, you know, put your arms around this situation, and know that there is help and that there is a way to transcend the challenges that are going on right now. So I see him embracing it. He sends his love. He sends his caring. And he's also saying he's sorry for something. I don't know what that's about. But he's saying he's sorry that he couldn't do more, that there wasn't more that he could have supported in. It seems that he's working on the issues that he left with, that he has to deal with now. And he's very sorry he keeps saying he's sorry. He wants to know people that he's sorry.
Okay.
It seems that he has to be in a school or a realm where he's learning about what he didn't get done. Like he's in a review process right now, which is often happens, and so he's understanding more about his life and about these other aspects of himself, and so that's what he's looking at right now. I can tell you and assure you that he's looking at this. It's not like he's ignoring it or blowing it off or.
Right. I just didn't know how to help his one son, Andrew. You know, he seems to be struggling.
Yeah. Well, he needs to be surrounded, like embraced. That's what I'm getting. It's like there needs to be a way to support that child by coming together around him, and to let him know he's not alone. Let him know that he's not the only one that's gone through this. So if there's some grief support groups or some hospice often has grief support groups that are really, really helpful. Bereavement groups, they have bereavement groups for people that have been left. So these are some of the things that you could possibly offer the boy,
okay.
The son.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, he isn't. I'm giving you that information. He's saying he's just sorry. It's like he's so sorry that he had to leave, but evidently this is what happened and where he is, and he's profusely apologizing. And I guess he wants to be forgiven. He would like to be forgiven for leaving. But it's just it was his time. It was just his time. So it feels unfortunate, but there are, you know, this is a long range kind of thing, the grief process. So there are children's grief groups. How old is this boy?
He is 16.
Okay. There are grief groups for kids, and usually he might be put in an adult one. He's kind of on the boundary of it. The other thing is connecting. The grief groups will help connect him with other people that can support the process.
Okay.
Because I think that what helps with grief is to know that there is a process involved in grieving.
Okay.
That it is, there is an end to it, and there is a change that happens at different stages of it, and kind of understanding what the grief is about. I think, you know, all those emotions are going to come up.
Right.
All the emotions come up with it. So, but he's leaving now. I feel his energy going back. It's like he has to be in this realm to understand the process and what he's going through himself.
Okay.
Are there any last questions that I could throw out to him as he's leaving?
No, that was it. That was it. I do appreciate it, though. Thank you.
Yes. I hope that helped.
It does. Thank you so much.
All right. You take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Anne, for calling in. And... our next caller, actually, funnily enough, is also named Anne. But this one's calling from Florida. And she is calling in mainly just to hear what message or who it is that wants to come through for her. So, Anne, are you with us on the show?
I sure am.
Welcome to the show. And I'm going to hand you over to Robin, and we'll see who or what wants to come through for you.
Awesome.
Hi, Robin.
Hi, Anne. How are you doing today?
Wonderfully.
Good. Okay. Is there any specific guide or spirit guide or person that you'd like to talk to?
Nope.
Okay. So let me just tune in to you and your energy, and it'll take me just a second. Hold on. Thank you. Oh, there's this beautiful golden angel behind you. It has a lot of rose color, beautiful flowers that it's sending to you, all kinds of love. Oh, it's so beautiful. Are you in touch with your angels?
I am.
Yes. Well, this one is just like, just pouring out love to you. And its message is you are love, that you are this love that's just pouring over you, and it's like full of roses. Do you like roses?
It's my last name.
Oh, well, no wonder. Well, I would get yourself some, these roses are pink, and they're mm-hmm. kind of a dark pink, beautiful roses. The scent of rose is often what comes with the Virgin Mother, Mother Mary, Virgen de Guadalupe. There's roses that are very much associated with her. And there's a sense I have of your being supported in your life at this time. There's this embracing that you do with God and with Spirit, and God's embracing you back, just wanting you to know you're loved and you're cared for, and that there's nothing that you have to fear. So I just see you're surrounded with light, with love, with caring, with help. There's all kinds of help if you need it, and this angel is just embracing you, and it's just standing around you. And I would, if I were you, I would suggest lighting a candle, a white or a gold, yellow gold candle. This is with some roses around it, just in thank you, because it's so beautiful. I'm overwhelmed with what you're being given here, and what you give to the world. It's beautiful.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah.
You know, I just have to tell you that my name on BTR is Lumination, so the gold really fits.
Well, it's also feeling like a message about your presence and the value of your presence on the planet. That, you know, a lot of times when we step into the being realm, which is not about accomplishment, the doing realm, which is, we're all really familiar with, you know, how our culture really supports that. But when we're in the being realm, what matters is our presence and how we love others and love and extend that love. So the message that I'm getting here very clearly is you're in the being realm, you're with your presence, and you're giving that presence to other people, and that is a gift. It's so beautiful. It's almost like wherever you go, whatever you do, your presence is a gift to others. And I can't say that emphatically enough. So bless you. Thank you for calling, and thank you for being on the planet.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate that. You validate a lot for me.
Oh, good. I'm so glad. Take care, Anne.
You too. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Anne, for having been patient and listening to the show and calling in and being receptive to what wanted to come through. And we'll just go ahead and move on to our next caller. And this is Erin, who is calling from the San Francisco area. And she has an aunt who just died a month ago. So after having listened to an earlier part of the show, she wondered if perhaps it's too soon to try to connect with her. But she said if it is, then she's also very open to just what or who wants to come through for her.
Okay.
So Erin, are you there?
Yes, I am.
All right.
Hi,
well, welcome.
Thank you.
And hi, Erin. Nice to meet you.
Hello. Nice to talk to you.
Yeah. What was your aunt's name, dear?
Susan.
Mm-hmm. Let me just see if I can connect with Susan. I'm sensing her energy, but she's still in the crossing over mode. So
I thought so.
Yeah, so she needs time, and to call her back now would not be a good thing for her. Let me just tune into you for a second. You have a number of guides around you. Are you familiar with your spirit guides?
Yes, I am.
Oh, good. I'm so grateful for that. Well, your guides are here and around you, and they're wanting you to know that perhaps 3 months in January might be a good time if you want to connect with her then, or February.
Okay.
And they're also wanting, they're putting a mirror in your hand and putting it over your heart. And my sense is, if you heard the meditation, that this will help you, the meditation could help you reflect in your heart and to be with yourself. This is a perfect time to do that because of the dark time of the year. And so that reflection is going to help you somehow. I don't know how exactly, but you'll find out. That's their message to you. So I'll give you that message from your guides. Keep looking at yourself. Keep looking and inquiring, self-inquiring, and this will open up a lot of answers that you have right now to your questions.
Okay. Is there something I can do to call in more support for myself and my daughter?
Yeah.
I feel like I'm in a time of huge transformation, which always kind of makes me feel a little discombobulated.
Right. A couple of callers ago, I suggested looking into hospice bereavement. Those are free groups, and they're very helpful if this is a grief issue. But in this transition time, my sense is that there are some older women that you might be able to connect with that might be of assistance to you. I don't know who they are in particular, but you may know who they are. I have a sense that there are other moms that might be helpful with your daughter here, that you may be connecting with through your daughter's school, a teacher or someone else that may be able to help you connect with support, and that the transition, that is the 3 months. There's something about the number 3 and 3 months until the first of the year. This is a very intense time right now. We're in 2012. This is the turning. And so your transition is part of that turning. It's part of all of us are going through lots of transition right now.
I feel it.
Yeah, and so your transition is part of that transition. And your daughter's going through that too. She's able to get through this. I mean, she's a strong one, and a very very kind of logical, kind of grounded kid. So she's going to be okay. But I think through your daughter's school, you're going to find some help and some support. I don't know if there will be other mothers that you'll connect with. A teacher. My sense is there's a teacher or a counselor, someone at school that could help. So those are some places to start.
Is when I've gone through transformations many times in my life, but this one feels like way out of my hands. Like I'm working to be very grounded and to receive the messages. It's a bit painful. I feel a lot of stuff coming up for me right now, but I know eventually, I know I'll be okay, but what can I do to settle myself with it? Like I feel like I don't know what's coming, and I can't really, I just keep trying. Well, I have received some gifts, I got it, that I've been sort of praying for and asking the universe for.
Right.
But are there any messages from my spirit guide and that I can do to ground myself more and sort of use my energy to, you know, motivate myself and sort of just go through this transition? It just feels like the one of the biggest transformations of my life or something. There's things right. that I can't see, I can't really grasp.
Right. So I know. I'm laughing because I know because I've gone through this myself. So what I would suggest is that you really listen to what they're saying. There's some self-inquiry that's very important, looking at aspects of yourself. And then also that's very, very important, that your inner work is really crucial right now. So it isn't about looking too far down the road. It's about being right here, right now, in this moment, putting one foot in front of the other. You may not be able to see down the road very far. It may be like, okay, today I know I can do this. And
yeah.
I know I can put my foot here. And today maybe I'll go to my daughter's school and see if there's some support I can get for her around this issue. But it's one step at a time, literally. And when you're in that kind of moment, what you're doing is you're transitioning from a doing place, that action-oriented, like, what can I do, you know, that kind of wanting to kind of cling on to the accomplishment or, well, at least I can get this done, to being, which is sit where you are and stare at the boxes or stare at what you're needing to do and do one thing at a time and wait until the moment is right for that to happen.
Okay.
So that is what my message is for you. It feels very important, very critical for you to be present with everything that's going on. So your presence is actually helping your transformation into being. And this is a vortex that we go through. It's like a shift in consciousness. And this is the shift. It's all about our own self-reflection right now, looking at the parts of ourselves that we don't like very much or that are limiting us. So that's
painful.
Well, it can be painful, but it also is the only way that we can love ourselves into the transformation of presence. That's the vortex we have to go through, is embracing those parts of ourselves that don't feel very adequate and don't feel very good about ourselves. And those are the very ones, usually younger aspects of ourselves, that we need to embrace.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. I know. But the thing is, it's a process, so just stay with yourself, put one foot in front of the other. It'll be revealed what you need to do. You have your guides with you. They're really wanting you to keep looking at yourself.
And are they the same guides that I've always had?
Yes. Yes, they are.
Yes. Okay.
There are four of them, I see, in each of the cardinal points for you. So,
well, I know two of them. I don't know. I only know two of them, but...
That's okay. You only need to talk to one of them, and they can speak for all of the others.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Nice to talk to you, Erin.
Thank you.
All right. Take care.
Thanks.
Thanks, Erin. And I just wanted to toss in that tomorrow is a new moon, in Libra, and there's actually some interesting astrological energies around this, which are about balance and looking at what's out of balance in our lives right now.
Mm-hmm.
And also for, especially there's some aspects, it has to do with Neptune and Pisces and different things, but there's some aspects about looking at where, especially in our spiritual life or spiritual practice, something has gotten out of balance and what we need to do to initiate or especially reinitiate some sort of spiritual practice that we may have engaged in that helped us to stay connected on a regular basis. that has kind of fallen by the wayside in some way, so that we, especially new moons are great for starting these things. And so really focusing over the next few days on trying to use that energy of the new moon to perhaps get back into a regular practice or something that you did that helped you feel more connected to, more receptive to, or better able to hear what your spirit guides were trying to communicate to you on a regular basis.
Okay.
Toss that in.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I used to do rituals on the moons, and I haven't.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of people do them on full moons, but they kind of neglect some of the other moons. And I would encourage you to maybe do one under the new moon. And that may actually be an opportunity for the awareness on your part of one of the other spirit guides that you have that Robin mentioned to start making themselves more aware to you.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
Well, all right.
Thank you very much for calling in.
Yeah, thank you.
Sure. And, well, if you're not pressed for time, Robin, we have just one more person that was waiting for a reading, if that's okay.
Okay, sure.
Mm-hmm. All right. And this is Deb from Los Altos, California. And she is calling in, and she actually said that she's been doing some genealogy work recently, like kind of tracing her genealogy and all of that. And she was just curious to see if there was anyone or anything that might be wanting to come through as a result of some of the work she's been doing, and the even just the awareness and communication, or not communication, but just the awareness that she's been getting with some of those things in terms of her ancestors and all of that kind of thing. So Deb, are you there?
I am.
All right. Well, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Robin.
Hi, Deb. How are you today?
I'm doing well, thanks.
Good. So you wanted to look at your ancestors. If there are any ancestors around you?
Yes. I thought that might be an interesting thing to do, since I've just recently been doing a lot of work through Ancestry.com and have learned a great number of names and dates and so forth, mm-hmm. and would love to know if anybody in particular just wanted to say hi.
Okay. Let me just check in. Hold on.
Okay. Sure.
Well, you do have your ancestors standing behind you. They're very pleased. I'm seeing a male patriarch, seems like a grandfather, or could be a great-grandfather, who's standing behind a lineage. And I see you, and then I see your mother and your father's sides coming around you, and then this patriarch is kind of at a particular place where your mother and your father came together. So it seems like it's a grandfather.
Okay.
And he's really glad that you're doing this work with the ancestors. And he's also letting you know that there's healing available for your family through this ancestor work that you're doing.
Okay.
It's a healing through acknowledging the different aspects of your family members, different parts of your family, all the parts of your family.
Okay.
As well as recognizing that your curiosity is going to help educate other members of your family, perhaps siblings or children, about where you came from and your roots.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people in America are very uprooted because they don't really have a connection to a strong connection to their family lineage. And some do, but, you know, the fact that you're doing this is going to really be helpful for your family, for your family's grounding. Let me put it that way.
Okay.
So this grandfather's very supportive, very excited that you're doing it. It seems like it's a grandfather on your mother's side.
Okay.
Is your grandfather on that side, on the other side?
Yes. All of my grandparents have passed now, yes.
Yeah, well, he is particularly interested in this. for some reason.
Okay.
And very supportive and very, very honored that you are doing this work. And it's not about accomplishments. It's about understanding the family dynamics.
Mm-hmm.
And also understanding, we're all very often when we do family histories, we just get names, dates, and birth dates and death dates. And, you know,
right.
each of these people, just like us, had lives.
Right.
And so when we delve into the ancestry, it's very fascinating to find out, well, what was their life like then? And this is, this is living history. So your grandfather is just so glad you're doing this because it helps to acknowledge each and every one of the members of the family. And there's something about acknowledging all of the family that seems very important.
Okay.
Including, whatever, bank robbers or whatever.
Right.
It seems like it's not just about acknowledging the accomplishments of those that have accomplished things, but also about acknowledging, perhaps the family patterns. And that's he's nodding and he's saying, yes, that's it. That's the family patterns. It's very important so that you can either accept them and use them or evolve beyond them. That's
okay.
What his message is.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Thank you so much. Yes.
Wonderful to talk to you.
You
care.
Too. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Well, thank you, Robin, so much for having been on the show today and shared all of this and gone a little bit longer to make sure everybody got their readings.
Yeah, my pleasure. My pleasure.
And hopefully as you're getting some of those new projects off the ground, some of the new books, as well as the new workshop process or training process after the new year, we can have you back and you can talk a little more about that and how that's going and how people can be involved in that and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I'd love to. It'd be really fun. Anytime, Pisces.
Excellent. And I just want to remind people that if you'd like to contact Robin or find out more about her or get in touch with her to set up a private session, you can find her and information about her work at www.thecenterforthesoul.com, or you can call her and, I don't have your number right in front of me. Can you give us your phone number?
Yes, it's 831-457-2483. That's 831-457-2483.
Excellent. So thank you to Robin for having been here today, and thank you to everybody listening. And we will look forward to having you back to listen again next week when John Carosella will be the host with his show Convergence. So I encourage you to tune in then. And as always, you can find archives of our show to listen to anytime at our Blog Talk Radio show page, which is blogtalkradio.com/Fireflywillowslive. You can also find archives of our show and information about episodes at fireflywillows.com/live. And you can also download or subscribe to a podcast version of the show on iTunes. Just go onto iTunes and search for Firefly Willows Live and it'll come right up as a podcast. So thank you everyone for listening today. And we will look forward to having you here next week. And until then, may whatever was the best of today be the worst of your tomorrow.
Thank you for joining us on today's episode of Firefly Willows LIVE. We hope you enjoyed the show. Join us next week as John Carosella hosts Convergence. Next week, John explores the Celtic holiday of Samhain, or Halloween as we know it here in the U.S., with Taoist Wicca founder and priestess Susie Pelletier. Samhain represents the death of the year, a time when the veils between the worlds are thin and the ancestor spirits are close at hand. John also shares his experience of the sacred hunt and how his experiences at the edge of life have enhanced his spiritual understanding. Our roundtable topic is keeping death at a distance. What are we missing? Join us for that and more next week on Firefly Willows LIVE. This is Deb Carosella. Please join us next Sunday morning at 10:30 a.m. Pacific Time on Firefly Willows LIVE, Blog Talk Radio.